And welcome back to Sheep Stuff You Should Know. This is Ryan Mahoney coming to you live from Amy Tower One. And today I'm joined by my good friend, Mr. Dan Makin from the Asylum, UC Extension offices up in Auburn, California.
First episode of the new year, 2022, man.
Yeah. This is year three.
Yeah, God, that's hard to believe too. And it's so that means it's also year three, beginning of year three of the never-ending pandemic, I think.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. What is it? Doesn't it turn into an endemic? It's just like always around.
Yeah, I think so. We got to be getting close to that, I would think.
Yeah.
How was Christmas?
It was really good. We had the whole family is over. We hosted Christmas dinner. We did Christmas Eve at my uncle's and then had a nice, I don't know, we wake up Christmas mornings always, or Christmas Day is always a lot of fun at our house. We went to midnight mass.
Nice.
Christmas Eve. And then we woke up early and I made breakfast because we have a theory that the only time that we have leverage during Christmas Day as a parent is before the opening of the presents. And so Santa Claus came, of course, and we had all the presents under the trees, but I don't let my kids open any presents until after they've eaten breakfast. So that way we get load them up with carbs to help kind of buffer that sugar intake for the rest of the day. So we gear up and we had a big Christmas breakfast. And then after breakfast, we open up presents. And then after presents, then we clean up breakfast and start cooking Christmas dinner. And then at about 3-4 o'clock, everybody comes over for Christmas dinner. And so it was just nonstop in the kitchen all day.
Oh, fun. Very fun.
And it was fun. We did a Snake River Farms prime rib and just absolutely amazing. So yeah, it was good. I still got my Christmas stuff for you, Dan. I got a calendar right here for you.
Awesome.
And I got some stuff in the freezer for you. So I got a wool hat for you.
Well, we'll have to get together. I'm actually taking lambs to Dixon Monday and then picking lambs up in Dixon on Friday. So maybe between Friday. One of those two trips, we can figure it out.
That'd be great. My Monday's pretty busy, so I should be clear to go back to work and then on Friday, by Friday for sure. So
cool. Yeah. Well, let's touch bases. That sounds good.
Absolutely. How was your Christmas?
It was great. It was great. It was quiet. We had just the girls and us at home. I think I'm usually the first one up Christmas morning, just because I can't wait. I'm like a little kid. And we're not quite as well-prepared as you are. We usually open presents and then we do breakfast and then we open stockings because Santa, you know, Santa wants to make sure you have something in your stomach before you open your stockings. And then usually the girls and I go out and feed guard dogs and check sheep, and Sammy takes a deep breath and probably a nap while we're gone. And then we start on Christmas dinner. So
perfect.
It was good. And we went, we typically go to my folks in Sonora for a couple of days right after Christmas, but with all the COVID stuff and the crazy weather, we went up just for the afternoon and had a campfire in the snow and saw everybody and came home. So
that's nice.
That's good. Did you get a bunch of rain between Christmas and New Year's?
Gosh, it's been raining nonstop. Our feed is so phenomenal right now, Dan. It's unbelievable. I think we're at about 15 inches for the year.
Wow.
Yeah. Perspective, we had 3 to 5, depending on the ranch last year, and we're over 15 now. So it's absolutely unreal. Absolutely unreal.
Right before Christmas, we went past last year's annual total. Last year, we had 19 for the whole year, and we're close to 25 inches now since October 1st. So
we beat last year's annual total on that one first
storm. We were talking last night, you know, and trying to figure out what the spring was going to look like. And we've decided that we're just going to ask for a perfect spring. We might as well. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to happen.
Absolutely.
What could go wrong? California and weather. Yeah, nothing goes wrong.
Bet the ranch on that. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
No, it's unbelievable. Any side effects from all the rain? Any like mudslides or any issues like that? Road conditions, drains?
Nothing really here. You know, we were just at the bottom of the snow. So folks that were much higher than us just got hammered with snow, and there's still power outages up the hill from us, you know, probably another 10 days before they'll have power again. So thank you, PG&E. I guess that shoots our sponsorship opportunity from PG&E, but.
Oh, no, they're going to call you up and start working on you now.
It so far down here, everything's been great. No real adverse effects. So
that's amazing. Yeah. How about nutritionally?
You know, I think probably the feed's a little bit washy, but I'd rather have washy feed than no feed.
Our feed's strong.
Is it?
Yeah. We're having trouble with bloat in the calves.
Cause all the clover.
Yeah. So much clover and fillery. It's been unbelievable. And just, I mean, we went from having grass tetany to bloat in a matter of like 5 days, and we've been dealing with bloat ever since. I just ordered a dozen or so bloat blocks.
Wow.
It's just, yeah, it's unreal.
Wow.
Unreal. I mean, it's all good. The gains are tremendous, and you just see the health on the animals is spectacular. We got foot rot in the sheep again this year, finally. I thought we were managing through it, but apparently not. Apparently it was just drought.
Amazing what above average rainfall will do for all kinds of things.
Oh man. But yeah, it's been good though. It's all good.
So what are you guys treating? How do you treat foot rot?
We look at it as a whole year management deal. So we go and, I guess I'll start when we wean. So when we wean the lambs off, we take the ewes and we'll sort the good footed ones from the bad footed ones. Everything will run through the foot bath. Yeah. And then anything that shows any kind of limping whatsoever, we'll give it a shot of LA 300, just a tetracycline. Mm-hmm. And then we trim anything with any growth on the hoof. We don't try to trim out the foot rot. We try to cure it with the antibiotics and harden the hoof up with the copper sulfate bath. Mm-hmm. And so that's the spring treatment. And then we record that information, and anything that gets trimmed goes into our terminal herd. Mm-hmm. It depends on how much we want ewe lambs or not as to how far we cut, but anything that gets trimmed basically gets bred to Suffolk year over year over year. So they continue to produce lambs for us, but they're not going to produce progeny in our herd long-term. And so then throughout the season, we do that work in the spring, usually right after shearing. So April and May is when we're doing that. And then through the summer, we tend to not have any issues because it's dry and hard. And then once we get into the fall or this time of year, we give a foot vax shot. And then during our reworks, if we're like right now where we've already marked our lambs, we're bringing them all through again for the second rounds of C&D and wormer, the first round of wormer and the second round of C&D for the lambs, we'll go ahead and treat anything limping with a LA 200, LA 300, or a Zactran, depending on how severe the foot rot is. Okay. And the Zactran, both are with a vet script, I think.
Yeah, right. I'm going to pick Dr. Bush's brain tomorrow about foot rot and some of the stuff she's found out about it more recently too, because I think it's going to be one of those years.
Yeah, you definitely need to stay on it. And I found it's really easy to look at be able to say just call them if they got foot rot, just call them. But when you're running it as a business that needs to make money every year, I think it's really important to treat it and try to don't cull that animal. Just try to breed it out. It tends to have a shorter lifespan.
Yeah.
So we found a lot of success of doing that, because on a year like this, we'd lose 30-40% of the sheep maybe.
Right.
And so you don't want to just cull everything. You want to just work it out and try to build on those resistant genes. Now, the smaller the number of sheep you have, the more manageable it is, but depending.
Depending. Yeah. But I think there's always danger in kind of single trait selection. And if your single trait is just foot rot, you're giving up some other things, I think.
Well, and it's so seasonal year to year, you'll have bad years and good years. And so if you're making that choice on everything on a bad year, you might be getting rid of some fairly resistant genetics. Just they broke with it the wrong time. Maybe, maybe they didn't have enough gravel to walk on to dry the feet out. Maybe our mud's really clay. And so it gets stuck up in the hoof. And that's really the big cause is when you get that. And if you can get them on some gravel or you trail them down the road, you can knock a lot of that stuff out just naturally. And so some of that infection's management. It's not the sheep's fault. They got it. It's your fault.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pose, I don't know how this will work today, but I want to pose something we're kind of pondering up here and kind of get your perspective on how you would approach something of this nature. Give you a little bit of background. We are going to lose about 15% of our irrigated pasture more than likely this summer, just because of property selling. And we may graze it this summer, but long term, it's probably not available to us. A farm that we grazed in the fall during flushing and breeding, his lease got jerked out from under him, and it's going to be houses probably by the time we'd get there this fall. And so we've lost a place that we go to for maybe 4 or 5 weeks in the fall. And on top of that, Roger, my partner, is wanting to step back a little bit and get to do some traveling and, not be so involved in the day-to-day stuff. So really kind of looking at the whole operation, what's it going to look like? What does that mean if I'm, instead of half the labor, what if I'm 90% of the labor now with less feed, all of that sort of thing. So I'm really trying to noodle through what our future looks like going forward.
Well, no, number one, just to cut you off, whenever you have a partner or employee, think about maybe stepping back a little bit, just go ahead and double the workload.
Yeah.
And make sure you just stop them from having, it basically means they have too much downtime to start think about things. So you want to eliminate that downtime and fill it up with work, and then he won't worry about it. And that solves one problem.
I'll let Roger know that. That's good. I won't let him know that. I'll just tell him I can't do it.
Hey, your workload's, this is getting tough. You got to work harder now. I shouldn't joke too much about that, but, no, that's all good. That's all good stuff. I think the most important thing that you said there is that these are all things that are going to happen. These are realities of what you're facing, and you're thinking about them and making a plan now rather than reacting to them this fall when you go to move those sheep in and there's houses where you're going to have feed. I mean, that's the key of a good decision, is that you're thinking about all these things now. And
I think it has to be based on the feed as I'm thinking about this. I think my time and effort I can put into the business or something I can manage, but the feed is kind of a given, it's part of that equation that I can't necessarily change in the short term. And I don't think, we've talked a little bit about this before, I don't think it makes economic sense to bring forage to the sheep if I can take sheep to the forage. I don't know that I would want to make up that lost grazing by buying hay and throwing hay to them. So I think there's got to be a different approach to dealing with that change in grazing capacity too. But maybe I'm looking at that wrong too. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think first you identify those time periods that you need the feed.
Yeah.
And then the next major decision I think you need to look at is what are my options? What are my opportunities? And when you're in an all lease based scenario, you need to, and you lose leases, you have to think about, do I want to just sell the livestock that would carry? Do I want to, or is there any opportunities that I have with any neighbors or any locations right next to it that maybe could supplement that? And so now's the time you make the call to those guys around you and say, hey, I'm looking for feed for this time. Do you have anything? What are the options? Maybe they can even take the sheep in for a period of time and give them, there's a lot of ways to navigate that.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have, then from there you have the time, the cards on the table, and you can start looking at, all right, now here's my labor, personal labor input, because I have the feed now. And if I have the feed, I can put in the effort. If I don't have the feed, all of right. the extra stuff, you know, it's all kind of extra stuff on the top.
Yeah. So, right. Right. Yeah. And that's, you said something there that I've kind of kicked around and I want to explore further is, you know, maybe there is somebody else that can take in the sheep. Maybe there's somebody that wants extra mouths to put on a grazing contract in the summertime, or, you know, maybe look at how we market and feed our lambs differently too. You know, that may be an option for us too. So, one of the other things that occurs to me is that for a small operation, we're a fairly complicated breeding system. And
well, that's because you're a UC extension agent.
Exactly. Right? Make life complicated. That's our job.
You overthink it.
But I think simplifying that whole system would simplify labor and feed requirements in the fall tremendously too. Mm-hmm. Just not sure what that looks like for me. What kind of genetic direction it would change. It would change our genetic direction. And I'm not sure what kind of direction I want to go in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know you've talked about changing genetic direction some, and how would you look at kind of a turning point in a business like this, where you were maybe going from a replacement group and a terminal group to just simplifying your genetic approach?
Well, I the first thing that comes to my mind is my grandpa's always told me this is you don't, and you can't take this wrong, but you never fall in love with your livestock,
right?
You care for the livestock. You love the livestock, but you don't fall in love with your sheep, your genetic type that you have, because you end up losing different opportunities when you do that. So you miss opportunities on the wool because the wool isn't good enough versus what you right. could maybe be doing, or the meat that you're selling, you might be missing a market opportunity. You know, so it's always, you know, always continue to strive for that most productive sheep or the optimal productive sheep in your operation, but don't fall in love with a single type at any given point. So mm-hmm. and that attitude allows you to say, you know, I got Rambouillet fine wools that are just perfect for what I have. That allows me to continue to say, I think I need to bring in some Merino influence to breed mm-hmm. my ewe lambs and not be worried I'm going to lose my ewe. Right. You could say, oh, well, I need to breed more terminally and buy in some sheep or something. It keeps those options open, and yeah. it kind of keeps you more of a, I don't know, I guess the classic way of saying it would be a non-emotional decision-making process, but
yeah. Yeah, makes it more objective and rational.
Yeah, I think objective is probably the more proper term than emotional, because all decisions are emotional at some point, even if you're pretending it's not.
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, so so I don't know. In making a genetic change, the first rule is it's never a finite change. You don't make it and it's done and you're stuck forever with this animal. It's right. you're always working in general directions running a commercial herd. If you're running a purebred herd, that's a different attitude and approach. Show sheep would be a different attitude and approach. But in a commercial business, you're always working directionally. So when you're making a genetic decision, you're making a directional decision more than you are, I'm losing my blue-faced Lesters and I'm ended up with a straight Shropshire, or, you know, you're not going to do that. You're going right. to go in a direction, and you can just as easily as you turned into that direction, you can turn away from it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. So, and that helps you from being afraid to make that change.
Right.
You got to think of what's best, try to be as objective as you can, and then make that change. And then be asking yourself as you're going through that change, was that the right decision? Is this working out the way I thought? Is this better than I thought? Is it worse than I thought? Do I need to make a change back, or do I need to continue that route? you know, as you're going through it, because, you know, no change is finite. You built the sheep you have today. You can build them again tomorrow if you had enough time and patience. So just,
yeah. Well, and as you're talking, one of the things that strikes me too is to kind of think about what the goals are for us kind of mid and longer term, you know, is the goal to continue to have a kind of a commercial flock, or is the goal to be doing something different with the land that we've got available to us? I don't think I'd make a huge shift to a purebred or a show sheep kind of operation, but maybe it's time to kind of think about what we're lacking in our sheep and how we might change that too.
Yeah. And it's about, I mean, it's also, I know you're an aspiring economist. You like to say.
I'm a recovering economist.
Recovering economist. Yes. But you very much look at your operation from a business perspective.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to recognize there's nothing wrong with doing it as a hobby, so to say.
Right.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with doing it as a hobby that pays for itself plus a little extra if you're lucky, kind of thing. Like there is, there's always that stigma of you want to grow, you want to make more money, you want to do all this stuff. Well, that's kind of a false drive a lot of times, especially mm-hmm. on the smaller scale type operations. You can have a herd of sheep because you love working dogs. You can have a herd of sheep because you just love sheep. You can have the heritage breed stuff. We talked about it that last one. I mean, that's just an incredible, that is an incredible value to an industry that has no idea how important it is almost.
Right. Right. Right.
And that can, the heritage breed stuff, a lot of that can only be done on a hobby type mindset.
Right.
And so,
right.
You know, I wouldn't let, if I was giving Dan Macon, my friend, advice, and you're thinking of, well, I can't make these sheep money, you know, make a lot of money, I'd say, well, good. Just do it to a labor situation that you like and do it. Have fun with it.
Right.
You know,
right.
And if you can make money, great. Like,
And if it can support itself, great.
Yeah. And if you have to downsize for 1, 2, 3 years, and then the opportunity pops up and you can scale back up.
Yep.
Go for it. There's nothing wrong with living within your means, I guess. But it's very true. I think a lot of people, as they get into the business, they spend so much of their time chasing feed, and then they grow and they chase more feed, and then they grow more, and then they chase more feed, and they get into this cycle where they spend 70-80% of their day chasing feed, and that takes so much away from their, you know, their sheep for one, but then their family, their personal life, there are all of these other things that make up who that person is, suffer because they're just spending all day on the phone chasing feed, trying to wheel and deal with people on that. And it's just, I see a lot of operations running into walls that way, and it's super important. And that's why I said, like, the first thing is you're talking about all this before it's happening. You're aware of the situations,
right?
You're considering it all now. So that way you're not stuck on the phone, you know, for 21 days trying to find feed you needed 2 days ago.
A home for the sheep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think what it's highlighted to me as I've just started this process too, and it's really been maybe the last week or 10 days that I've focused on it. It's good to think about how to simplify too. You know, that's a good thing.
I think that's always something you have to do. Always should be looking at ways to try to simplify the way you're operating.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't. Did I talk about the 75? That's going to the 75 day lambing window on the podcast. You know,
I don't know, but you should now if you haven't.
After our last, after our last 2 years of recording, do you remember one conversation about that?
I think so, but
yeah,
remind me.
Well, so anyway, we have always lambed. We turned the rams out May 1st, and then we would leave the rams in until October 1st, essentially, and pull them sometimes November, sometimes December. And we ended up lambing most of our sheep in October, November. Mm-hmm. And then we just had this trickle of lambing that happened December, January, February, March, April, and even into May sometimes. And with that, actually Jeff, who used to work for us, he brought this to me and he said, you know, this is costing us way too much time to do all this stuff. We got to narrow it down. And I said, well, what are you talking about? You get extra lambs. You have to leave them in because you get all the extra lambs. And we ended up taking and looking at our EIDs and looking at our birth records and everything. And, we figured we'd lose, 13% of our sheep would not have lambs if we stopped our lambing window on December 15th. So 75 day window from October 1st to December 15th. And the other problem is most of the lambs that were lambing in March were ewe lambs.
Yeah.
That we exposed young, and then they bred to lamb in March because they bred when they were a year old, and we turned the rams in when they were 8 months. And then trying to pull them back up and rebreed them the second time, we were having problems with rebreeds. So anyway, we cut our lambing window off. We lost 11% of the sheep, and it freed up 1 to 4 hours every single day in the month of December, January, February, March, and April. And so now our brandings get done on time.
Yeah.
Our markings get done on time. Our reworks get done on time. We have time to do our fence work in the winter. I mean, it's amazing how much time we freed up for ourselves because we simplified that lambing process.
Yeah.
And that was because Jeff sat down and he looked at everything and he was like, how can I simplify this? And that question led to that answer. And it saved us thousands of dollars.
And you measured the benefit of it too. That's part of it too, right?
Well, you always have to, especially major decisions like that, you always have to like prove yourself right over time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And not be married to the decision you made. I mean, we made the decision to change, and then we were constantly following it through to see, is this really working? Are we really getting our brandings done on time? Are we? And yeah, we are.
You were.
Yeah.
And one of the things this has kind of forced me to think about, you know, we have usually shipped all of our pairs back to our spring and summer feed the first week of April, just because we want to get over that irrigated pasture and kind of keep it in a good growing condition. And while that's important, that also means, given our shearing schedule, that I haul sheep the first weekend of April and I haul sheep again the last weekend of April. And maybe that one way to simplify this is just to haul them home for shearing the last week of April, and then they go out on pasture and we put up with the fact that the feed's going to be a little coarse the first time over it. You know,
yeah.
There may be some benefits to simplifying like that too.
Yeah. And there's no, I mean, and you talk about, you don't want to haul hay to the sheep and be substituting the feed, but there's nothing wrong with a little supplementation at the right times.
Right. Right.
You know? And so if you have a little coarser feed like that and you need to have protein tubs out there for 10 days, 2 weeks, do it.
Yeah.
You know, just figure that in, because if those protein tubs save you 2 days worth of labor, you paid for your tubs.
Exactly. So, and you paid for the, not to mention fuel in the vehicles and all of that stuff.
Yeah. It's $7 a gallon. It's kind of,
I saw something today that said beer is less than gasoline right now.
Oh man, we should get in the distillation business.
I know.
Yeah. I know. Cutting vodka into the, unleaded.
Start growing corn.
Yeah.
So I guess the last question for you, and this is kind of related, but, we've experimented a little bit, as you know, this last fall with feeding some lambs and just kind of figuring out whether that's cost effective for us, whether we got the setup to do it. And I think at our scale, I'm probably missing some of the kind of the, not the shortcuts, but the ways that we can make it more economically feasible. You know, maybe buying feed in bulk more, or looking at how we handle that differently. I think we've got the place to feed a few more lambs at home. But I don't know at our scale if it makes any sense to do that either. You know, kind of our last podcast, thinking about the kinds of sheep that we raise versus what you raise. And can we be both a niche ethnic product and a fat lamb out of the same genetics. So what were, what would questions would you be asking yourself about that part of the enterprise at this point?
Well, so for us feeding, I think one of the mistakes a lot of, I've seen a lot of different people make is you end up feeding a pellet or a finished TMR.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you do a TMR, a total mixed ration is what a TMR stands for. If you're feeding that or some kind of pellet, there is a company that bought the raw ingredients, mixed them, pressed them, got them into that form, sacked them, and then sold them to you. And so that tends to be a whale of a lot more expensive than if you can buy raw corn, alfalfa hay, and a trace mineral block.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
by doing those three things and throwing it out there yourself in a more simple ration, you can save probably anywhere from 10 to 40% off of your feed, depending on what you're doing. So that would be the one big thing I would look at if you're serious about feeding lambs, is try to get to as raw of the products as you can.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, you can get a little better gains off of some of that stuff, but it's just so darn expensive because it's expensive to mill it.
Right. So, right.
Yeah.
Is there a risk, as you're starting doing that, something like that, and not getting the balance between the fiber and the concentrate quite right?
Always. Yeah. And that's a risk that's what the, you know, your premix show feeds and stuff, they kind of,
that's what you're paying for.
That's what you're paying for. But it just takes a few conversations with some nutritionists, and whole corn is incredible. When that cellular wall, that corn kernel is intact, you can pretty much feed them all you want. And they'll do all right on it. You know, it's once you start cracking it, smashing it, heating it up,
making it more digestible,
it makes it more of an efficient feed, but it also makes it a more expensive feed if you're having someone else do it for you.
Right.
And where you're just looking at finishing a bottom end, you know, a little supplement with some whole corn goes a long way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I would, and the other thing too is you the world runs on corn, but, barley or oats or wheat or some of these type of grains that are available in California as well, those are pretty dang good sheep feeds. I think barley is one of the best converting whole grain sheep feeds out there. And you got to talk to a nutritionist to figure out exactly what you're doing.
Right.
But, I mean, our feedlot ration is cracked corn, alfalfa, molasses, and a trace mineral pellet. And the main reason for the pellet is those trace minerals, and you can almost accomplish the same things out of a salt block.
Yeah.
Right. In it. So
right.
You're talking about trace mineral block, alfalfa, corn, and we have the molasses as kind of a binder for the feed, but that's not necessary. So it's pretty simple is what I'm saying. It's not super complicated.
Yeah. I'm sure I could make it complicated if I tried, but
get you and Dr. Petty in a room and you'll get it. Get a smoking good feed.
That's all really helpful ways to look at this. And it's, you know, as you said, I'm lucky I don't have to make that decision tonight.
Yeah.
but it's something we'll be noodling through here for the next couple of weeks. And then we'll get into lambing and I'll forget everything I thought about.
But you'll have lambs to sell.
That's right.
A pretty ridiculously good market. So,
what do you think? Totally shifting gears. Where's this market heading? What do you think?
That's a good question. So, there's a lot of debate out there, and anybody who's not familiar, the U.S. lamb market has just been historically high the last year and a half, really, and it's mainly spurred by a lack of supply. But there's also, and that from the live lamb, American produced lamb standpoint, but it's also inconsistency on the imports, the issues with the trade coming in, that's kept demand high and unfulfilled. Stuff can get in, but it's very inconsistent and the volume's difficult. And you're having a perishable product on a freight boat coming over the ocean is just it's risky right now and it's hard to get stuff in. There's been stories of container ships getting turned around full of lamb and, you know, you run them, whatever it is, 40 days here and 40 days back with a 90-day shelf life, you kind of
you got to get that stuff moved.
Got to lose your boat. Yeah, it's not good. And so you have that, and then you also have record increased demand. So you have when the meat got short, everybody in the country bought every pound of protein they could find on the shelf, and every expensive protein, the sales went through the roof. And lamb was really fortunate to benefit from the fact that people that tried it liked it.
Yeah.
Well, now they want it again. And so you basically doubled demand in the retail sector overnight. And then you got food service and opening back up. You got cruise ships starting again. And I mean, you just have demand is just really, really strong right now, combined with food inflation and all of these other things. You just have a lot of positive upward pressure on the sheep industry. Now you do have a lot of ewe lamb retention that's right. happened over the last fall or 6 months or so. But there's still a lot of unease in the industry as a whole, because it's never been this good for very long. And so, I think all of that said, and then the other side of that is we've seen incredible demand in what we call the ethnic or the non-traditional right. slaughter. And historically, that segment of the industry was never able to handle the volume of lamb when the commercial industry went down really far. But when COVID hit and we had the MSR bankruptcy, the ethnic market or the non-traditional market stepped up and took all of the product. And so their increasing demand for lamb is really one of the main drivers. And they're a huge price setter in our industry now right. that they weren't before. And so they're holding this light feeder lamb market up, which is going to, so you have, as if that stays healthy, which it seems to look like it is, you also have goats at record high, like $4 right. a pound. I'm like, right. that helps bring the lamb market up. So short term, the next 6 months, I think the lamb market's going to continue to be good going into the spring. Lambs are going to get short again going into the spring and summer. The mountain, which is 85 to 90% of the sheep industry or sheep produced, sell in the fall quarter. Those start selling in the end of July, beginning of August. So as you work August into September, the volume of lambs will start to trade. And if those ewe lambs that were retained this year are having lambs getting sold this next year, you could see a drop. But if those lambs don't get bred, ewe lambs are hard to breed early. And demand is so strong. If this ethnic non-traditional market right. stays super strong, if the coal ewe price stays super strong, I think this is going to stay strong for another maybe up to 18 months, but I'd say 6 months to 18 months. So your main indicators are going to be in the fall.
Yeah. Right.
Years. If it stays strong through this fall, it'll probably stay strong through the next year.
Well, that's an interesting thought about the non-traditional market too. If it's really become kind of a floor or a foundation for the rest of the market, as opposed to an add-on, that could really shift some of the dynamics, I would think.
Yeah, it absolutely has. I would say that statement is a past tense statement. That happened last year, and they stepped up to the plate. And you see that industry starting to sophisticate. It's one of the words I can't say. Sophisticates itself. It's getting more streamlined. It's getting more efficient. And when you have those things that happen, it opens up the opportunities to the commercial breeders. The other thing that I think is huge in that price discovery equation has been the video sales. These internet video sales has connected buyers to sellers that weren't able to connect earlier. And that's kind of opened up this game and really started a new chapter in the sheep industry. All that said, we're a very small industry. You shut down our plants for 1 week and all of a sudden we're backed up.
Everything's months. Yeah.
It's crazy how small of an industry we are and how these little tiny hiccups can really
create big effects. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you get a large retailer doing a big deal with Australian imports or something, and they can smoke demand overnight. So you really don't know.
What about the wool market? Where's the wool market going?
Well, it's up from 2 years ago, which was zero.
It's all positive.
Yeah, it's not a lot. What do you say? Not a lot of downside risk. fine wools are you can get them moved at a reasonable price. I think, you know, $2, something like that. I see it going up. We definitely have some supply chain issues. We have labor issues in the processors in the US. Mm-hmm. We also have a shortage of processors in the US and yeah. all of those things. I mean, our 2021 clip, I think, is just coming out of cleaning now or something like that. And so, I mean, it takes forever to get stuff through the system in the US right now. Mm-hmm. And when that, I don't know, who knows what's going to happen with China, but, the whole wool supply chain was basically upended 2 years ago, three years ago, really, with the tariff wars. And
then just driven further into the tank with COVID.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, it's definitely getting driven into the tank, but it's all being realigned. So, you know, you're sending wool to India and Turkey and different places like that that used to not see it. You got more demand on the U.S. plants. You got more opportunity in the U.S. for somebody that maybe wants to build something.
Yeah,
you know, there's opportunity there. You see some small wool mills pop up and do real well. I don't like that Valley Oak place up in Woodland is doing exceptionally well. And there's a lot of opportunity in wool. I see us, we've been kind of tinkering with this upward trend on the fine wool side for quite a while. The coarse wools are going to be brought along with the fine wools with time, just because the capacity to handle that kind of wool is just not there.
When that train leaves, let me know, because I've still got my 2021 wool in the barn.
yeah, I know, man. There's a lot of it around.
Yep.
I have some coarse lambed wool that it was some crossbred lambs wool that had seed in it, a bunch of stickers.
Yeah.
We had to shear them. I think that's been in the warehouse for 2.5 years now. Still there. I didn't even get a bid on it. That's the thing. Like, I'd sell it for 10 cents. Like, I don't even care. I just want it gone. So I almost had it sold where I told him you can only take the white face nice wool
if you take this.
Nope. All right, fine. Take the good stuff.
I've thought maybe of paying for Sammy to go away for the weekend and then like re-insulating the attic with last year's wool or something, you know.
Yeah.
And then she'll come home and say, "Why does it smell like lanolin in the house?"
It'd be cool if you can come up with like a, I don't know, like an at-home heat treatment where you can just like run the wool through and burn out the seed and the grease.
Yeah.
Just kind of like some kind of at-home scouring thing that's not super messy.
But. Yeah, super messy or super expensive.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I think that's a grand idea.
Yeah. Well, anybody wants to do it, I'm not going to go after you for trademark violation. Go for it.
I'll buy the first unit.
Yeah, if you send me a new one free, we'll give you a free promo.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, this is good. We caught up, and thank you. It's helpful to see these things through somebody else's eyes. So thank you.
Yeah, I feel like I got a million questions for you, and I should be asking you all the questions. But
this is good. This is really helpful.
Really good. Helpful. Yeah, thank you for asking, and always good to talk and catch up. And I'm sure we'll be talking more about this as time goes on.
We will. We got American Sheep Industry Conference coming up, and
that'll be fun. We'll get some in person stuff and some interviews and.
Yeah.
I don't know when we're going to have time to interview. I think all of us are speaking on all 3 days or something.
Like about 10:30 in the bar maybe or something like that.
Well, that'll make a good recording.
Yeah, John will earn his editor's income if we record in the bar.
Yeah, he got a free calendar too. So.
Wow. Man, you're just well paid. I don't know. Well paid. Yeah. Really well paid.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. You take us out this time?
I'll take us out. This has been the first 2022 edition of Sheep Stuff You Should Know. I'm Dan Makin up here in Auburn, California, and Ryan Mahoney down there at Amy Tower 1 in Rio Vista, California. Good to see you, Ryan.
Good to see you too, Dan. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.